What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Awesome Village. I'm Greg, and joining me is...
John.
Glenn.
And we're missing someone today. He was upset. Was that correct?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't get a chance to go watch Bad Moms, the Christmas, whatever it's called. Bad Moms Christmas, okay. So, I think he just, you know...
He's pouting.
He was upset with himself and with the world because he didn't get to see it, so he's at home.
Yeah. I've abandoned my movie.
Yeah. I think he's eating the rest of the Halloween candy from
his kids. He very well might be doing
it. No, there's no Halloween candy left.
No, there wasn't any left.
We got ravaged in about a half hour.
It looked like a scene from The Walking Dead.
More like that scene from World War Z.
We were trying to throw everything in the garage and get back inside after all the candy was gone, and the kids were coming. There was a shovel there. At one point, I thought I was about to pick up this shovel and start like swinging it so that Glenn could get everything safely into the garage, and then we were just going to throw the shovel at the kids and run inside.
But
after we went inside, all the lights were off. There's still kids beating on the garage door, and you can just take out track at your haters. I'm like, Jesus Christ, there's like zombie children outside trying to get this candy.
But
anywho.
Yeah, so he's probably sitting somewhere speaking in a 1922 voice.
Yeah.
But.
Speaking of 1922 voices and wives, your wife's birthday is today.
Yeah, it is. So happy birthday, Sandra. She's been on the show a couple of times. Yep. Happy birthday, baby.
Happy birthday.
All right, so in TV, I got a chance to see something that Glenn's been talking about.
I tried to warn him.
This poor man. It just happened to be on TV, so I watched an episode of Inhumans, and boy.
Well, did I steer you wrong?
No, and it's a shame, too, because it's a bad show that's happening to good people.
Oh, I do not blame a single actor on the show.
The production value is so
Other bad. Than the dog. The dog looked pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Anson Mount using sign language. It's nothing I never thought of before,
because
usually Black Bolt's just kind of there. But, it's not a good show.
No, and like I do not blame a single actor. I can imagine them... getting like reading descriptions of what the characters are in the comic books. Oh, this is going to be pretty cool, and like I get to work with Marvel, and then the shit comes out, and it's just not good.
Yeah, I mean, and I will like point out that I watched this random episode. It is like the second to last episode of the season, but I don't. I mean, I know a lot about the Inhumans, and I wasn't necessarily lost with all the characters or whatnot. It just was kind of like I didn't understand a lot of the motivations.
That and I will say, I think the CEO of IMAX came out and said how kind of angry they were about what the ABC did with the budget that they gave them, because apparently when they wanted to film the first two in IMAX, the IMAX Corp, they like sort of co-produced the first two episodes, and when the IMAX people saw the product of their investment, that's when they cut it down from 2 weeks to one in the theaters. It's a shame. But it's a rare kind of extreme misfire for Marvel.
Yeah,
because Agent Carter didn't quite get the audience they thought, but I thought it was a well-made show.
No, I would agree with that too. I mean, but the thing with Marvel is they stick to because it's Disney, they stick to things, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s ratings, quality of the show aside, the ratings are awful. If for another show would have been canceled by now.
Oh yeah, totally. In fact, I think ABC there was. Some story kind of towards the beginning of the summer that ABC wanted to cancel it, and Disney stepped in and said no because it's in their master plan for the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. Wow. So I say what you will, you know, it's the mouse is he's a tough one, but Inhumans, just skip it, save yourself the pain.
But there are two other shows that John got to watch the finales of, and he can tell us if they're worth watching.
The Deuce is the first one that I watched. This was the first season for The Deuce. It was a really good show. It's a big cast. There's a lot of people in it, a lot of different characters. It's made by the same people that made The Wire, and there's a lot of actually actors that were in The Wire that are in this. And it's we talked about it before, but it's about this area in New York right around Times Square. It was, I believe it's 42nd Street, and they refer to it, the slang name was The Deuce, and it was just this whole area where there's all kinds of prostitution and just drugs and pimps and all this stuff back in the 70s. And so there's all the different prostitutes that are in it, and then there's the cops that are kind of turning a blind eye to them. And then there's a guy that's just trying to be a good businessman. He gets kind of connected with the mob a little bit. They set him up to open up a bar, and he makes it a success. And then they start trying to open up massage parlors to get the girls off the streets. And then the pimps are starting to wonder where they fit into all this anymore. And it was kind of, I guess, the end of that kind of era. And then they started, some of the characters started to get into the porn industry, because it's during that time was when the laws started getting a little more lax on that sort of thing. So it's a really good show. I mean, it's, if it was in movie theaters, it would easily be NC-17. It's very inappropriate for younger people. I mean, there's full-on sex and nudity and everything, and everything, and lots of drugs. But it was a good show. If you like The Wire, it's very much the same type of show.
Which is also the same people that did Tremé, too.
Tremé,
correct?
Exactly.
So, I mean, those are very slow burns. I mean,
yeah,
it's
they
not
are.
Like...
And like The Wire and like Tremé, the setting is very much a major character in the,
sure.
in the show.
Because someone, when Tremé first started, someone asked me what it was about, and it was just sort of like...
It was very hard to say.
It's just it's
show,
about
yeah.
people.
Yeah,
I mean, that's...
yeah, it is. Yeah, this one is a little easier to say what it's about, but it is very... It does remind me of that. And I mean, The Wire also, you could kind of say what it was about. Tremé, I do completely agree with you. But it's definitely worth watching. It was only, I believe it was only 8 episodes, but it got picked up, I think, after the first episode for another season on HBO. It did really well. And
Franco, correct?
James Franco, who plays twin brothers in the show.
Oh.
Which is pretty cool. And Maggie Gyllenhaal's in it.
Yeah, I saw the pilot, but that was... Yeah. I didn't get to see any of that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's one of those shows, and again, you have to... Because there's so many characters, like you saw in the first episode, it takes a few episodes to kind of get to know all these characters. And
I mean, sort of the same thing could have been said for Tremé, because, I mean,
right.
there was a lot of characters in there.
Exactly.
And, I mean, you really didn't feel connected to any of them in that show until 3 or 4 episodes.
Right.
So.
But it was just very good writing, good dialogue and everything, which is how Tremé was and how The Wire was. So, yeah, check it out. If you got HBO, I mean, you can watch it all on HBO Go or HBO Now or what have you. So that ended. That was the first season of that, and then I watched the season. I'm trying to see what's Ray Donovan ended, and I'm trying to look and see what season that was. Was
it
season
five?
Season 5 just ended. This was a very good season of Ray Donovan, which I've said at the end of every season of Ray Donovan so far.
Yeah.
This season actually opened up with we knew his wife Abby had been sick, and she'd had cancer, and she was kind of in remission. And this season actually opens up, and Abby has died when the season opens. And the entire season, that's not really a spoiler, that's something that happens in the
first episode.
And the entire seasons, you just kind of don't know how exactly it came around, her death came around. You know she died, she got sick and died. It wasn't like a murder or anything.
Was there a time jump in between
seasons?
Yeah,
there was a time jump, but then there was also, a lot of the episodes were flashbacks going into it. So Paula Malcolmson, who played Abby, his wife, who she deserves an Emmy for this season especially... she's still in every episode because there's all the flashbacks. And I mean, I gotta say, there was one point in the season when you actually, it's the episode where you actually do get to the part where she dies and just what everyone is going through at the time. I'm not ashamed to say that I sat on my couch and I was ugly crying on my couch watching this. I mean, it was rough. I mean, the acting across the board was great. I mean, she in particular was great, but Eddie Marsan, who plays his brother Terry, who's got Parkinson's in it. He was very close to Abby, and it was like kind of like she was kind of his best friend, and just the two Paula Malcolmson, Eddie Marsan, and Liev Schreiber should all get Emmy nominations in my opinion this year so far.
It's criminally overlooked.
Yeah,
it really is. Like you don't hear a lot of people talking about it as much as they do other things, and
as it usually does at the end of the season. The whole show just kind of blows up at the end, and to where they start, and they don't say exactly what's going to happen in the next season, but they have already announced that the next season is actually going to take place in New York, not in which there's a lot of the stuff that was going on when you get to the end. You can kind of see where they're going with it, but yeah, so far it's all been in L.A. because he's an L.A. Hollywood fixer, and which they could. Hollywood could use a Ray Donovan right about now, huh?
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
But yeah. But anyway, yeah. So check that out. If you haven't watched any of Ray Donovan, start from the beginning. I mean, it's a great show.
You need to learn the rules of that world. And you get Elliot Gould.
Elliot Gould at the beginning. And there was two episodes in this where there was an absolutely crazy character. I'm looking up his name right now. But he was played by the great Jake Busey.
Jake Busey.
And he just runs, comes out of nowhere with a gun, shooting and screaming his name. And his name was, I'm looking it up, his name was Acid Man. And he was just some kind of meth head or something, who at one scene just comes running up yelling, "I'm Acid Man, don't fuck with Acid Man," and starts shooting a gun at people.
Does he play a glow-in-the-dark neon violin in this movie?
He does not. Okay. But after the whole scene happened, it was a really hectic scene, and people are getting shot and all this stuff, and when it ended and it settled, I was just thinking to myself, was that fucking Jake Busey?
He was one of the most frightening things about the Frighteners.
Yeah.
And Contact.
So yeah.
And most things.
Yeah. But
it's a rare situation where the sequel to Gary Busey did better than...
So far.
So far. So we also have, speaking of Showtime, shows coming back this weekend on Showtime, which is a little bit different from Ray Donovan, but nonetheless entertaining. And that is Shameless.
Ah, the Gallaghers.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know really what to say about the show other than it's a dysfunctional family in Chicago that...
Yeah, how would you describe this show to someone that's never seen it?
I would say a dark comedy based around a degenerative family in Chicago.
Yeah, and almost like an R-rated Roseanne.
If they all had, like, no principles whatsoever. Their only principle is kind of surviving and getting over the stigma of their father, who was played brilliantly by William H. Macy,
yeah.
And Emmy Rossum, she's really good.
And she's been directing a lot of the episodes recently.
And this is season 8.
I know, it's amazing how many seasons there have been.
Yeah.
And that kid, the one that played the pre-Joker or whatever in Gotham.
He's very good. I mean, the cast is really... It's been interesting seeing these people grow up. Joan Cusack was in it for a few seasons. Mm-hmm. She was very good in it. Bill Murray's brother was in it.
Which one?
I always forget.
Joel Murray.
Joel?
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely a show worth checking out. I'm excited to see
Cameron Monaghan is the kid that was in Gotham that was like the pre-Joker kind of kid. And, yeah, he's really good in it.
We had a couple of things in TV news this week. One of which is that Stranger Things, which we keep coming back to recently, had an insane amount of viewership.
Kind of broke the internet. Because Netflix, they're always kind of funny about releasing what you would call ratings. But they kind of, you know, took an exception. And what was the number of people that watched it the opening weekend, Jeff?
15.8 million.
People watched it.
Watched it.
So if you think about that, if that weekend, I think Jigsaw was number one at the box office. If this was a movie, it would have destroyed that. Yeah. So.
And, I mean, when you think about it, 15.8 million, that's... And I'm sure that's not necessarily people that watch it. That's how many accounts watch it. So, I mean, if you're sitting there with a family, at least two people watching it.
Well, that, and I know just by seeing things online, they had a lot of viewing parties, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the number of people that watched this season was outstanding.
I mean, you're talking about a situation, that number for a television show on regular network TV?
Yeah.
A network would clamor to have that.
And, in fact, they actually announced, I just saw this yesterday, it was something around the 380,000 people watch the entire season the first day.
Yeah.
So that shows you...
I mean, just doing a little bit of math just in my head. I mean, 15.8 million, I mean, if that's, say that's that many, two people watching. Sometimes it's three, sometimes it's one. But if that's all two people, you're looking at, what, 32 million people roughly in the first weekend. And if that was movie tickets, say they're $10 each. They're more than that.
Yeah.
That's $320 million.
Yeah.
For a TV show.
A Netflix membership's about $10.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons people are signing up is going to be that show.
But, yeah, I actually found it. I finished season two, and I loved it.
I did, too.
I really liked season one, and I think I enjoyed this one.
I do, too, but I think it's one of those things where it's kind of hard to say. It might be just that I love whichever season I've watched most recently, because they're both really good.
Well, this one, I just kind of like the way that they paired up the characters and the way that they paired them up, because some of them was kind of unexpected. Like,
yeah.
But, I loved it. They had some surprises.
Dustin and Steve were the best pair.
That was my favorite thing in the entire show. And I will say at the finale, like the last, I got a little emotional at the end. It was, for a show about, you know, kind of crazy X-Files-ish, it was kind of touching at the end. But, looking forward to season three whenever
they're
comes
doing
out.
What they're doing season three and four and then that's ending. It.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I was at Target we were buying some stuff for the baby, and I saw the season one because they have like right by the registers at Target they get the Blu-rays, and I saw Stranger Things season one, and I picked it up, and it is totally, it looks like an old VHS you would get at, like, not like a Blockbuster. Like, it has a peel-off sticker with, like, a handwritten $1.99 on it. Yeah. And on the back it says, includes playable VHS plus the two disc Blu-rays or whatever. Wow. So that was kind of cool.
So how many episodes are on the VHS?
I have no idea.
It was just one
tape. Yeah, it was one tape, yeah. Put the tape on.
Yeah.
You mentioned X-Files, but some trailers for that have started.
Yeah, we're getting another season. Like, they relaunched it last year, and it was, I guess critically, it was kind of mixed, the reviews, but I enjoyed it, and...
Honky Tonk, but Honka Donk.
Correct. They really mixed in some mythology and some standalone and some kind of hilarious moments.
Yeah.
But the new season comes out in 2018, and they announced recently Haley Joel Osment's going to star in an episode that's going to focus around Skinner. So
interesting.
Yeah, so we're getting another season of the X-Files.
What was the name of the episode that Rhys Darby was in? That was, I think, by far my favorite episode last season.
I can't remember.
It's something about the lizard man or the lizard creature.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that one was hilarious because it kind of went back to some of the old, like the shows from the 60s. Like, was it Night Gallery and stuff like that?
It was Mulder and Scully Meet the Were-Monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, that was sort of classic, because there's an X-Files episode, which might actually be my favorite, called Jose Chung's From Outer Space. That kind of, it's a good sci-fi story, but it's also really funny.
Yeah.
And this one is just perfect in that regard.
Yeah.
Speaking of weirdness as well, we also have a new series announced for CBS All Access.
The Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone by Jordan Peele, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Which, Twilight Zone was always something, I mean, I grew up watching with my parents and, you know, enjoying...
I mean, talk about... We wouldn't have X-Files without Twilight Zone.
I mean, for a lot of sci-fi, you wouldn't have a lot of sci-fi without that. I mean, it was a way for writers to get short stories on film.
And it was a lot of launching points to a lot of actors, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you don't see that now, like these... Because, I mean, you get anthology shows like American Horror Story, but that one's where every single episode's an anthology.
Yeah, really. Yeah. We also had some news that The Orville... kind of unexpectedly, got renewed for a second season.
I'm very happy.
I'm very happy for that. This is again, since I don't have CBS All Access and I haven't watched Discovery,
which they got a season two as well.
Yeah, they did get a season two.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for this because it's currently my favorite Star Trek show on television.
Well, it's the only one we have access to.
Right, exactly.
We don't have all access.
Yeah. which I don't know. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they're putting Twilight Zone. So now there's two. Like,
yeah, I mean,
like
I,
episode two series, like exclusive series, so maybe they'll get more people to watch that way. It seems very expensive for one freaking show.
Right. And that's the thing I don't like about it, and kind of why I refuse to pay for it.
Right.
And if it'd be different too, like if they were to do something where they put the first season on network TV when the second season is about to premiere, then maybe. But I don't see them doing that either. They want the money.
They're looking at the Netflix model, and they want... It's all about the do-re-mi.
Speaking of Netflix models, Amazon has announced there's going to be a Lord of the Rings series.
What do y'all think about this?
If it's based on the books, I don't think it's a good idea.
No, I think
the movies did a good enough job, and they don't need to be remade.
If it's just something that takes place on Middle-earth, where they're doing...
Yeah,
I'll be okay
with that.
Fine.
I mean, it's kind of the same thing what we were talking about when they're doing The Watchmen.
Yeah.
Like, that's already... I mean, Lord of the Rings has kind of been adapted perfectly.
Yeah.
If they're going to... I mean, would they just be doing it to stretch it out? I mean...
Peter Jackson already did that with The Hobbit.
Yeah.
So.
And look how that turned out.
And the extended editions of the movies. I mean, he filmed pretty much everything you need to have. It just wasn't all in the theatrical.
Except what was the one thing that a lot of the peers... upset belly
Tom Bombadil.
Yeah, something about the raping or the Shire or something.
No, it's the Scourging of the Shire. Yeah, basically at the end, like, Saruman doesn't die at the two... at his tower. Basically, he goes back and fucks up the Shire. And when the Hobbits come back, the Shire's all fucked up, and they have to, like, kill Saruman or, you know... They don't kill him. It's actually Wormtongue winds up killing him and then dying or something. And then they have to rebuild the Shire, which I think... I'm glad they didn't put that in, because it would have completely broken up the flow of the end of the film.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the process of adapting. I mean, sometimes...
Right.
You gotta change certain things.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as I would have loved to have seen a... on-screen Tom Bombadil.
Who is Tom Bombadil?
Tom Bombadil is this guy that lives in the forest, and he's, like, very, very old, like, one of the first beings in Middle-earth. And he kind of helps them when they go through the forest in the first movie. But, yeah, wouldn't, like...
He's not a walking, talking tree, is he?
No, he's not a walking, talking tree. Yeah. He's kind of a guy with a great, big, bushy beard.
Does he walk a lot?
He does, yeah. Okay. I mean, it is the forest, and it is the Lord of the Rings movies. Yeah.
So, it's what I guess we'll see what direction they take with this as for a TV series.
And as we've mentioned, we did not get to see Bad Moms Christmas this weekend.
Right.
So, you know, maybe Ryan will go see it.
It opened on Wednesday this week, didn't it?
No, well, you know.
I guess.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to see it.
But we did see Thor Ragnarok. That was well done, gentlemen. I'm proud of you. So Thor is the story of a young man who gets a hammer and does
stuff.
All
right. So when this movie takes place, where have we left? Like, because let's see, we last saw Thor, was it in Age of Ultron?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where he said he was going to go investigate Infinity Stones.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the end of the Dark World saw Loki impersonating Odin on the throne of Asgard.
Correct.
So that's pretty much where we are when this picks up.
Well, I mean, we also, in Doctor Strange, we had the end credit scene.
Correct. With Thor, right.
So that's kind of where we left off. This one kind of really picks up in... That whole search is going on for the Infinity Stones, and Thor hasn't really found anything.
Yeah.
All right, he's been looking for 2 years.
Yeah.
And he hasn't found anything. But the galaxy's kind of in chaos, because...
Right, and it kind of tips him off that something's not right in Asgard, so he goes back to Asgard
It was kind of interesting the way they did it, because... When Dark World ended, it was like such a big cliffhanger, and they resolved it pretty much in the opening of the movie.
I will kind of say this, that kind of lets me down a little bit, because I guess I kind of wanted them to do a little bit more with that, or that had potential that they kind of just were like...
Yeah.
Reminds me a lot of like the CW shows when they come back and everything.
But then again, this is 2 years later in Thor time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and plus, I mean, I guess the tone this movie set, that wouldn't have fit.
Yes, and I told John this while we were watching it, but they should have named it Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yeah.
Well, I actually think like this one, it's a very funny movie.
Yeah.
I will say that. But it does balance the action and the humor, I thought, better than Guardians of the Galaxy 2 did.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. That's the reason I enjoyed it. It didn't, like, one of my main things is they lean too much into the funny, and this one they leaned a lot into the funny.
Yeah.
But it worked in this one.
No, it did. It's the whole thing where it did work out well for this, but it's one of those situations where this is a comedy. It's not, it's not like and I think that the reason why a lot of critics like this and why it's so high on Rotten Tomatoes is because they don't take comic book stuff seriously.
Yeah. But this one, it's a lot of fun, though.
And I really liked all the stuff between Thor and Loki, because it was just how they were the two, you know what they've been through, and they're the two brothers that both love and hate each other at the same time.
But then, like, one thing with Loki that I kind of liked with this one, it kind of got him back into the God of Mischief more.
Yeah.
Because especially, like, with the Avengers and then the Dark World, they made him such, like, a dark villain.
Yeah.
And this one's much more him being mischievous, which is he's supposed to be.
Yeah. Like a con man.
Right.
Yeah.
So, a space matchstick man.
Yeah.
And it was directed by...
Taika Waititi.
Who John and I have loved from What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
Which is, if you haven't seen that movie, go see that.
Yeah.
Or rent it, because you can't go see it.
This director's pretty hilarious, because he's the one that... He kind of intentionally fucks with the press. He's been doing a lot in this movie. Because when he finished filming everything, he said in some interview, you know, somebody was asking him all these little mundane details about Thor, and he says, well, he's like, I hope you know this is going to be the shortest Marvel movie ever. It's clocking in under 90 minutes. And all these websites jumped all over it. They were all going nuts. How can they fit all this Ragnarok stuff in this much? And people are talking about how this is going to be a disaster. And the movie comes out and it's 2 hours and 10 minutes. And when someone asks him about it, he's like, oh yeah, I wasn't being serious. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a very very good sensibility and made some good choices in this film.
Yeah, he did.
And he worked... I thought... He directed Chris Hemsworth very well, because if you take the Thor movies away and look at his filmography, he's hilarious. Like, he was really funny in Ghostbusters, and I never really saw the whole thing, but the scenes I saw of the Vacation remake.
Vacation was not a good movie, but his scenes were very funny.
Yeah, he seems like a hilarious person.
Yeah.
So, And also, we have an interesting villain in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take that, Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett plays Hela, the goddess of death.
Who is apparently Thor and Loki's older sister that they didn't even know about.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of, like, sheds some new light on Odin.
Frigga's Frigga or whatever's daughter is what he's saying. But yeah, basically it was someone they just kind of forgot about. But Odin in the comics is very different from Anthony Hopkins' kind of like nicer Odin. So it was interesting to see him kind of have those feet of clay that he didn't have in the rest of the movies.
Yeah.
And also, I guess it's not really a spoiler since it was in the post-credit scene, but Doctor Strange is in this movie. Mm-hmm. And their scenes together I thought were really good. I love Doctor Strange fucking with Thor. I thought that was kind of funny. But did y'all enjoy this?
I loved it. I really did. It was exactly what a Thor movie should be.
I mean, I really liked it too. And in fact, the audience I saw it in a sold out theater, and everyone was laughing and clapping. And I mean, it seems like audiences are digging, eating this up.
And if you haven't seen a trailer for it, good. Just go see it without seeing the trailer, because there's some stuff in the trailer that I think the movie would have been better if we didn't know about it.
I will agree with you. Like some of this stuff that when I saw it in the trailer, I'm like, okay. I think it's almost kind of necessary to sell the film.
Yeah.
But then once I saw the scenes in the movie, I'm like, I kind of wish I hadn't seen it.
There's kind of a big build-up to some of it, and if you already know what's going to happen, it's less funny.
But there's some fun, really, really strong supporting characters. Like, Jeff Goldblum plays the Grand Master, and which is the brother of the Collector from Guardians of the Galaxy. And Jeff Goldblum's kind of falling into a part in his career where he's just playing crazy Jeff Goldblum. But I thought it completely fit this type of character.
But no Kat Dennings.
There was no Kat Dennings in it, or Portman.
Well, they mentioned her. Yeah, they just mentioned that they broke up.
Yeah.
Also, I thought he didn't have a whole lot of screen time, but Carl Urban, I thought, was...
Yeah.
He gave a really good performance.
He did.
As
especially
Scourge.
For what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, to not be in it very much, it was...
But then
he
again,
was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was a good supporting character. And then some other supporting characters were kind of a big deal in the other Thor movies. Kind of get...
Shafted?
Erased pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I don't want to give out spoilers, but...
Yeah. No, but you're very right.
So...
But yeah, and Taika, the director, plays... he did the motion capture, and he played this guy in it named Korg, who's like this big rock monster in it. But he's like this big, if you look at him, big scary looking rock monster, but then he's got this very, very timid New Zealand accent. Yeah. And like this big rock guy shows up and he's like, hey man, what's going on, man?
Which in interviews, Taika Waititi mentioned that he got the inspiration, he went to some like biker bar in New Zealand and the bouncer was like the biggest guy he'd ever seen and he had this like small little timid voice.
Yeah.
So that's...
a big rock monster that's a sweetheart.
Yeah, and he's... He almost, I mean, he's not in it a ton, but it seems like every little scene that he's in, he kind of steals the scene.
Oh, yeah, he's really funny in it, but, this is a pretty good entry into the Marvel, especially, going into, because, let's see, the next one's Black Panther, and then it's the big Infinity War, so I think this one's pretty integral in setting up the Infinity War, too.
So what do you give it?
I'm going to give Thor Ragnarok an 8. I had a lot of fun with it. And in fact, there's one sort of... Again, no spoilers. Something happens to one of the characters that... I'm kind of surprised they kept secret. Which... I'm not going to give away, but...
Yeah. For a comic book movie and a Thor movie, honestly, I'd give this a 9. To me, it is exactly what a Thor movie should be. Because, I mean, Thor, you know, he's a god. There's not much chance he's going to get killed. So it's all these, you know... people hitting, like it was with him fighting the Hulk in the Avengers movie. I mean, they can knock each other 10 blocks down the street and they get up and they're fine. So it was a lot of just kind of humor mixed in with that and a lot of Thor's funny arrogance. And it was just, I loved it.
I'm vacillating between two different scores now, but I think I'm going to go with the higher one and I'm going to give it an 8 as well.
So, good entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe here. And for those keeping track, there are two. There's a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene.
I will tell you, the post-credit scene it's funny, but it is totally unnecessary. So
I mean,
if you really got to go pee, don't worry about it.
Yeah, they're almost kind of falling into this where the second one is the mid-credit scene. It's some sort of a setup, and the post one's a joke.
Yeah,
that was the same thing for Spider-Man, I believe.
Yeah.
I think it was the same thing. Well, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 had like 5 of them.
Well, I mean, they did it in the first Avengers too, where it was like the end thing was just them sitting around eating shawarma.
Yeah,
like,
so I mean, that's sort of the what it's falling into. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep, good movie.
Some other films that are going to be coming out pretty soon that we've seen trailers for. One is I, Tonya.
That looked awesome.
That looks insane. Which, I mean, do y'all remember when all this happened in real life?
Honestly, I remember that it happened, but it wasn't until I saw the trailer that I remembered how kind of crazy the situation was.
Oh, it was very much like... Which, it's funny how... Because, I mean, this was... What was it? Was it 20 years ago when this happened?
Yeah, something like that.
And it's funny how, like, almost relevant it is now with all the kind of white collar versus blue collar, what's going on right now.
If this had happened when the internet were what the internet is today, it would be interesting to see the kind of, because this took a life of its own just through like magazines and,
And
television, so it would be kind of interesting to see. But yeah, Margot Robbie looks a perfect blend of insane in this.
Like, at first I didn't recognize her when she showed up as Tonya Harding.
It was the attack thing that happened was actually in January of 1994, so that's more than 24 years ago.
I graduated 8th grade that year.
Yeah.
So your Pulp Fiction came out. So. Wow.
Good year for movies, bad years for Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but she did win the gold, didn't she?
I think she won the silver.
Oh, it was the silver.
Yeah.
That's right.
But she was the best American
at
the time.
But, it was... This trailer looks, like you said, it looks insane. It was Sebastian Stan plays...
He's Jeff Galooly.
Galooly.
You gotta love that name.
It sounds like some kind of Jello.
It's almost as good of a name as Buttafuoco.
Yeah. Oh, Joey Buttafuoco.
And he's about the same class of human being.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, I mean, this pretty much just tells us... It doesn't look like it really gets into a whole lot about Nancy Kerrigan. It looks like this is just Tonya Harding's story. Allison Janney looks like she just from the scenes in the trailer, I could see her getting a supporting actress.
I was going to say the same thing, because as many people as love her on Mom and all the acclaim she's getting for that, this is the way of the Academy, kind of.
Right. I mean, she was good in Juno, I thought. I mean,
she's been good in almost everything. Yeah, she's a funny lady.
Yeah, I could see her getting some Academy love.
And Glenjamin, what happened when you were watching the World Series the other night?
So, I'm watching the World Series, final game, Game 7, which, you know, congratulations to the Astros.
Well done, boys.
And in the middle of it, I look up, and I see Luke Skywalker on the Millennium Falcon.
It's a Star Wars!
And I'm like, what the? Because, I mean, living in the age we do, they tend to announce, like, hey, why don't you watch Monday Night Football? You might see something. And no one was expecting this, and a 45-second TV spot with almost all new footage dropped for Last Jedi. That knocked me for a loop.
And to see like Luke on the Millennium Falcon was a big deal.
Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of funny because if you think of for the marketing for Force Awakens, when you saw Han Solo in the Millennium Falcon, made you feel one way. When you saw Luke, it was a little more ominous.
Yeah, I mean...
The way that, I guess, everything was light... It almost looked like he was starting it up, like all the lights were coming on.
They're going through this big thing where they're trying to... And it's one of the things that I think is the misdirection aspect of it, but they're trying to make you think Luke is, like, not in full possession of his faculties, or he's might be a little bit bad. And, I don't know, there's, like, all the scenes with, like, them trying to show Kylo with Rey, and he's gonna, you know, that Rey might go to the dark side or whatever... I think it's a lot of, like, really big misdirection.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we'll see when the movie comes out. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised when they introduce Luke, if he might be a little crazy, kind of like Yoda.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if he's hanging out by himself with all these porgs.
So, I mean, after this TV spot, what do you think? Should we go see it? Or?
I don't know.
Should we cash in those tickets that we bought the second they went on sale?
No. We'll keep it.
Yeah.
But cool TV spot. Although I'm getting to the point where I don't want to see anything else. Like, I want to wait for the movie to come out.
Well, I mean, we're getting there. I mean, October flew by. We're about a month out. Yeah.
Before a new Star Wars.
That's right.
We also had a couple of cool little tidbits of news. But Sasha Fierce, Glenn, what was the big announcement with Beyonce?
Oh, so as many of you may know or may not know. Disney is doing I'm going to use this word very loosely, live action. Imagine that with giant quotes on it. Version of The Lion King. They're pretty much doing the same thing they did with The Jungle Book. except they're doing The Lion King. So it's going to still be, I mean, it's still animated. They can't really get animals to do this shit, but they're making it where it looks more realistic. And think The Lion King without the kid in it. I mean, the Jungle Book without the kid in it. So they officially announced the cast of this new Lion King. So we have Donald Glover playing Simba, which was a Childish Gambino. Yeah. James Earl Jones is returning as Mufasa. We have the operative himself, Chiwetel Ejiofor, playing Scar, which I think
is
pretty cool. Yeah. Alfre Woodard is playing Sarabi, the mom, which she has a very motherly voice. Yeah. John Oliver is playing Zazu.
Oh, that's perfect.
Isn't that perfect?
That is perfect.
John Caney is playing Rafiki, which his name might not be too familiar, but in Captain America Civil War, he was T'Challa's father.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so I mean, that kind of fits. Seth Rogen is Pumbaa.
Perfect.
Billy Eichner is Timon.
Oh, that's even also perfect.
And the big one, which has kind of been the, I guess, worst kept secret in Hollywood, is Beyoncé Knowles is playing Nala. So, Queen Bee is...
Foxy Cleopatra.
Yeah. So, it's going to be interesting to see if she does any music in it. Like, I'm curious.
So, at the end, if her and Simba get together, you know, at the end, like they do in the story, is she going to be the Lion Queen Bee?
Oh, look what you just did.
Well played, sir. Well played.
I think you just came up... You know how Disney does a little spin-off on DVD? You just came up with the first title for a DVD movie. So, what do y'all think about...
I'm waiting for them Disney monies to come in.
Oh, and also, like... There's a couple of other characters I wasn't too... Like the hyenas. One of them is Keegan-Michael Key. One is one of the hyenas. But other than that, that's...
Well, I mean, it's a movie, so he has to be in it at some point. Right. He's in everything now.
But so what do y'all think about this cast?
I think it's a good cast.
I think it's a very good cast.
Yeah. Like, some of this is inspired. Like, when I heard Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner's Timon and Pumbaa, I was like, that's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
How much drugs are Pumbaa and Timon going to do? So, I mean, I know
there's... This is supposed to be live action, but I mean, it's going to be what, like Jungle Book was.
Right, right. Well, Jon Favreau is directing it. So it's going to be pretty much like the Jungle Book.
But I mean, there's no humans in this one.
No.
So I mean, it's going to be all digital.
Yeah, but I think they're doing what they did with the Jungle Book, which it's motion. I think they got performance capture and motion capture. This is sort of the non-invasive one because they're pretty much just doing the facial capturing. So the one that kind of surprised me was Chiwetel Ejiofor's Scar. That's kind of perfect, though.
It is.
Because he's got a kind of menacing voice.
Especially when he was in, what was it, the...
Serenity?
Firefly, yeah, Serenity, thank you. When he was Serenity, I mean, is that agent, I mean, he was just very calm and collected and just menacing. Like, it was...
But then, like, when he snarls, I just think of those scenes in 12 Years a Slave when he, like, starts yelling all of a sudden, and I'm like, I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah. Should be cool.
Yes.
So, we had a little bit of announcement about the Justice League score, Glenderman.
Yeah, I thought this was really cool, because when Joss Whedon stepped in to kind of helm the second half of the post-production on Justice League, he hired Danny Elfman to do the score, which is kind of a departure from what they had been doing with...
Junkie XL.
Because Junkie XL, I think, had actually done the score for Justice League, and they threw it all away and got Danny Elfman. Well, he was doing an interview recently, and they were asking him about his work on this score. And he mentioned that for, you know, the themes for all the specific characters, for Batman, he's using his old 1989 theme. So, ba-da-da-da-da. So... I think that's awesome. Yeah. I think it's
going to represent the tonal shift too for Batman, because Batman's going from being kind of a psychotic individual from the last movie into he's got hope now and he's a little bit more tempered. So
So I think that's going to be when that I'm not going to lie, I'm not, I might lose some faculties when that theme starts playing.
Yeah,
just because as long as they don't bust out the Bat Dance. Well, I'll be good.
Oh, hell, new king in town, party man. I could sing that all through. Yeah. So we're going to talk about a couple of things. You know, one thing we kind of avoided for the past few weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we try to keep things positive here.
We do. So everybody, I mean, unless you've been in the cave, you know, you've heard the stuff that's going on with Harvey Weinstein and what's now going on with everybody else.
Sounds like they're about to arrest Weinstein.
Yeah, it does. Well, we agreed we weren't going to really talk about it because, honestly, the stuff that we talk about on here is the actual movies and the actual TV shows and sometimes stuff with actors or whatever, but... Really, yes, Harvey Weinstein's a big-time producer, but he doesn't affect the actual movie that we're talking about, so that doesn't affect anything.
And also, we try to stay positive. Stuff is just...
And it's supposed to be about fun, not about...
Yeah, exactly. But now it's bleeding over into other people, other actors, other directors, and it is actually starting to affect some of the things that we talk about, so we figured we'd, you know, talk about it a little bit. And I do want to preface this by saying, whatever we might joke about on here, what they're being accused of is pretty serious and horrible stuff, and... If it turns out that they are guilty of these things, I hope they get whatever's coming to them and they deserve whatever's coming to them.
And I think that's an important point to make, too, because people tend to, judge, jury, and executioner in 1 second.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if this is what happened, it's shameful and they should be held accountable. And if it isn't, it's... Their lives are already ruined because of my association with it. So it's, you know...
And I mean, as far as the Harvey Weinstein thing goes, again, all these people, we're going to wait till they have their day in court or whatever happens. His thing, I mean, there's so many people, it's looking like it's probably
It's kind of snowballing.
It's kind of snowballing. Some of the other things, these other people that are being brought into it, right now, it's one or two things, so...
Some people have kind of, come out and apologized, so they're kind of...
Yeah.
It's almost like saying, you know, this happened. Because some of these things happened years ago, some of these accusations.
Well, one of the ones that surprised me was Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny because his thing was kind of, he said, look, I encourage women to come out when stuff like this happens.
Right.
This did not happen. Yeah. And I, you know, but I don't want to knock the fact that women should come out. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of a one that I don't really believe that one based on that, but again, I don't know what the
evidence
is.
None of us were there, so...
I
mean, it almost sounded like the way she was the accuser, which I think she was auditioning for a scene in Entourage, I think. He sent what she said he supposedly did or did not do. Sounded very Ari Gold-ish.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if maybe there was a scene... We don't know what happened.
And then Andy Dick apparently asked some people out.
And the other thing that kind of concerns me with a lot of the actors and directors that are being brought into it is it started off with sexual harassment, and that's what people were talking about, sexual harassment. And then Harvey Weinstein's been getting a lot of other things, even so far as rape and sexual assault. And some of these other things, everybody's starting to lump it together. So some of these other ones that said, oh yeah, this guy harassed me back then, everybody's like, oh, he's just like that, he's raping people. Yeah. So then it's like, no, that's not what they said.
Yeah, but, and I mean, then there's the distinction of being with harassment.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah, like the stuff, like the recent one with Dustin Hoffman, which, I mean, it sounded like he was making a crude joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, and so he's being lumped in, which, if he did do that joke, it was very inappropriate, but it's nowhere near as bad as what Harvey Weinstein's being accused of.
Right, exactly.
But, I mean, I guess it's easy
for... Those poor potted plants.
However, it's easy for me to say, but however, if in that poor girl's shoes, I guess that was a very inappropriate joke, so I could see how she was upset.
Yeah.
But, like I said, this is just... kind of hard stuff to talk about, and we felt we owed it to our audience to mention it, because...
And the reason, like I said before, we weren't talking about Harvey Weinstein because it doesn't really affect stuff, but, now it is. Right now, there's the Kevin Spacey thing that's going on.
That one's kind of been crazy.
Yeah, and he got accused... It's a really weird situation. He was accused of... They're throwing out the word sexual assault. When they kind of said what happened, it... Didn't
well, because
really
it was
sound
it started.
It sounds like he made a pass at someone, and they.
However,
he got a little handsy, maybe. But it,
but
I don't,
it started with an actor by the name of Anthony Rapp, who's on Star Trek and Discovery, and wasn't he in Rent? I think.
I believe he was. He was in the movie. At
least. And
I've seen him in stuff before.
Yeah,
he's been in a few things.
But I think the big thing with that is when this happened, Kevin Spacey was 27, and he was 14.
He was 14 years old, which is a very weird situation. And again, if Kevin Spacey did what he's, you know, it's terrible if he actually did it, but it's very weird how he was 14 years old and he said he went to this adult Hollywood party by himself. And it's like, why was a 14-year-old at this party? Did Kevin Spacey know that he was 14? Maybe he did. I don't know.
It doesn't sound like Kevin Spacey knew from his response.
It didn't sound like he was drunk.
Which his response didn't do him any favors.
No, not at all. He came out as a gay man in the middle of an apology, and it's like, no, that's not
because
really.
He kind of said, if it happened, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't remember it. By the way, I'm gay.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it was kind of a little bit of a distasteful
way
to do
but
it.
But now, like, more people are coming out with things against
them. They're talking about how on House of Cards, and this is kind of where we're going with it, on House of Cards they were saying that it was a little bit of a toxic environment, and they're supposed to be doing the sixth and final season of House of Cards, and now Netflix has...
They fired
Kevin Spacey from it. Before they fired him, they were talking about what to possibly do with it, and talking about possibly killing off the character, and making Claire, who's Robin Wright, the main character, and now it looks like I don't know what else they're going to do with it besides that, because they've fired Kevin Spacey from the show.
They've suspended all production on the show, and they've now fired Kevin Spacey.
And I mean, if you've watched the show, I mean, I guess it's not totally unbelievable to think that a character like that would get assassinated, so I mean...
There was some joke, and I think it was the This Is Us from this week, that they had to cut out, because it was something about... It was a Kevin Spacey reference, really? And they had to lift out of the show.
Yeah. But it's been crazy all and now, going on. And
Brett Ratner, which, I mean, he's not the best director in the world, and I mean, honestly, from with his portrayal in the media, it didn't kind of surprise me that he got lumped into this.
This is one that it didn't take me by surprise at all, because I've heard some of the stuff
over the years. But what more surprised me, because Warner Brothers has severed all ties with him, and if you want to kind of be, you know. If you look at the movies he's directed, you know, that doesn't seem like a really big loss, but he has this production company called Rat Pack. And if you look up Rat Pack and the movies they've produced with Warner Brothers, it's a lot. So for Warner Brothers to sever ties with Rat Pack, that's a lot of, like, movies there that have just had the funding pulled out of them. So it's like John said earlier, Hollywood needs a Ray Donovan right now.
Yeah, but it's just...
But, I mean, I guess it's good that some of these things are being brought to the forefront to be talked about.
Yeah, and I mean, it needs to stop if that's what's going on. And I mean, I'm sure it has been going on for years. I mean, there's, you know, been rumors of casting couches and everything for decades. But
since Hollywood's beginning, I mean,
But that's what's so funny, that Corey Feldman, of all people, was on a big tear about this about a year or two ago.
And he's recently starting to come back with it.
Right, you know? And he's like, well, I told you this was going on. So, like, for that to have been happening all the time. I mean, I'm sure there's an environment where power corrupts, and I'll listen to Howard Stern all the time. His big thing is, like, some of these guys, like, why would you think that would work on a woman? Or right.
But and also we should say, some of these women that are coming forward, they're big names. Yeah. I mean, or at least they were
at the time, yeah.
Because, I mean, who is it? Natasha Henstridge?
Natasha Henstridge, that's the Brett Ratner one.
That was one of the Brett Ratner
ones. And Olivia Munn. I mean, Harvey Weinstein, I mean, it's countless women.
Yeah,
right.
Rose McGowan's the most outspoken. Yeah. But
the first one, she's the most outspoken, but the first one was... Ashley Judd.
Yeah, Ashley
the first
Judd
one came out, and I mean, it started about him, you know, being inappropriate and showing up like that. And now there's like, what was it? Who's the girl that was on Boardwalk Empire? Was it Paz de la Huerta?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, she's pretty much come out saying he came over to my house and raped me. And I mean, it's it's escalating quickly.
And then the announcement came over the wire, I think about a couple like hours ago, basically that New York police have got enough evidence that they're going to charge him.
Yeah, and. The one that's on, again, like, I don't like to make light of any of this, but I just keep seeing all the names, and I'm like, oh, now it's Dustin Hoffman on that. And I saw something about all this stuff over sexual allegations involving Terry Crews. And I'm like, oh, not Terry Crews. I love Terry Crews. And then I read it. Terry Crews is the one that was sexually assaulted.
I heard this story a couple of weeks ago. It's insane.
It's insane. It's like it was last year. He was at a party with his wife walking around, and this guy who's a big Hollywood agent... Adam Vennett is the guy's name. Apparently walked up to Terry Crews and just grabbed his junk right there. And it's like...
That's a bold...
That's a bold thing. I mean, Terry Crews is a mountain of a man. I mean, he's lucky Terry Crews didn't just, like, twist his head off and bowl it out of the thing. I mean, it doesn't, I'd say we're making light of it. I mean, it's
awful.
Terry Crews is a victim. I mean, that's crazy.
I mean,
crazy to say that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we don't want to make light of this. We wanted to mention it a little just because, John, it's hard not to talk about it now just because when you look at movie news, this is what everyone's talking about now.
And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I subscribe to, Variety sends me the emails, and I'm just sitting there at work and my emails are popping up, and when I see it's Variety now, every time I'm looking, I'm like, who is it now?
Oh, yeah.
Who is it now? And it's
could tell you, the only ones that I really kind of felt bad for were Affleck and Damon.
Yeah.
Just because they were heavily involved with Weinstein making Good Will Hunting, and if you look, that movie came out over 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
And I just, for... for them, for their case in particularly, I think of they were just kids at that point.
They were.
I don't think they knew what they were getting into. Yeah. And, I mean, Ben Affleck made four or five movies with Weinstein because he did a lot with Kevin Smith, too.
Yeah.
Affleck, I don't think he worked with them, but maybe two or three times.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there was the whole thing that they were coming out saying, oh, that, you know, he got Matt Damon to call up this reporter and spin this story about, to try to get the light off of him about, you know, an allegation. And then Russell Crowe did the same thing. And then the actual reporter came out and said, yeah, they both called me, but it was nothing to do with any of that.
Right.
And it's so people are kind of blowing some of the stuff.
Some of it.
I don't think a lot of the stuff with Harvey Weinstein is blown out of proportion. At least it doesn't seem that way. But I think at this point, people that are out there that are trying to make headlines are like, what other big names can we get to somehow link to this?
Right.
And it's going to ruin people's reputations. And
totally, yeah. Because, I mean...
If they did something wrong, great. Ruin their reputation.
Right.
But...
Because when all the stuff started coming out with Affleck, I was like, oh, goodness, he's going to lose the Batman gig because parents are going to want us. But, I mean, I will say, it kind of seems like people are... They're not talking about them two quite as much anymore. But, you know, it's... Hollywood's a strange place right now.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, our thoughts go out to the true victims in this.
Yeah, and like I said, we're sorry that all this is happening, but I guess it's a kind of a good thing that it's kind of coming out so that maybe this can finally stop.
Right.
So. But anyway, let's get back to lighter note. It's the holiday season.
Holiday
it is,
time.
Because it's the day after, like, Halloween, and all of a sudden there's Christmas decorations everywhere.
Yeah, I'm in Walmart on the 30th of October before Halloween even happened, and there's Christmas decorations. I'm like, you got two holidays coming up between here and Christmas, and it's, you know.
The Microsoft store at the mall has a bunch of presents stacked up, and they did that at close at October 31st, so... Yeah.
I mean, we still have to have the National Turkey Massacre.
Right, exactly.
Before we do that.
So we're in the Festivus spirit.
So we got some,
we're
going to kind of go over, like, the movies that are going to...
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at the Hollywood, if you look at the holiday movie season, Thor kind of kicked it off.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So, what do we have, gentlemen?
So, next week, which is November 10th, we've got... Daddy's Home 2, which is the sequel to the Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg family comedy that I did not see, but did very well.
And the trailer looks hilarious.
It looks really funny, yeah.
Because the grandpas.
They've added both of the grandpas there, and Will Ferrell's father is John Lithgow, and Mark Wahlberg's father is Mel Gibson, who looks like he's doing... Mel Gibson looks like he's almost kind of making fun of himself.
He looks like a more sinister version of his character from What Women Want.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good reference.
Yeah, so yeah, that looks. I mean, I didn't see the first one, but I thought the first one looked funny, and I heard it was funny, and this one looks.
All the marketing's been hilarious.
Yeah, it looks funny, and we also got the Murder on the Orient Express coming out, which
really cool cast.
Yeah,
so
big cast
of those. Which ones are you?
Is that all coming?
Well,
out
they also have that other one. It's kind of a limited release, I think. It's the one that's called Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is terrible title.
Yeah, terrible title. I saw the first trailer for it like yesterday, and it looks pretty good. It's
from Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, and it's the guy that wrote and directed In Bruges, and I think it's a true story, huh? That some woman, her child is killed, and I mean, it's a pretty, like, when you hear the story, it sounds very dark. But as the director and writer Vin Bruges can do, he kind of brings some levity
dark,
to it.
Dark and comedy.
Where she buys these three billboards going to the police station to basically shame them into working harder to solve the murder.
Yeah.
It looks like a good movie with a terrible title. So.
Yeah. So, of those movies, the three movies, I'm probably going to go see Murder on the Orient Express.
I was going to say the same thing. That's the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
Mostly just because I haven't seen the first Daddy's Home, and I don't know if I'll have time to watch two movies.
You won't be able to follow it?
Yeah, I'll be lost.
I mean, honestly, if Murder on the Orient Express would be sold out, I'd probably go see Daddy's Home, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But sure. Then again, like, the three billboards, I could see that when, especially I heard Frances McDormand might get some Oscar thing, so I could see that, like, maybe checking that out.
Yeah,
in the beginning of the year, sort of when more Oscar things start getting wider released, but Murder on the Express. Like for those, remember all those little YouTube clips that Josh Gad was releasing trying to get Last Jedi tips from Daisy Ridley on the set of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think of, and just they were all so funny, chemistry wise. So.
Yeah,
I think this might be good.
Yeah. So the week after that, the 17th, we've got Justice League. And Wonder.
I'm going to see Justice League.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw that we saw a TV spot for Wonder today. It's Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
And their son is it Jacob Tremblay?
Yeah, Jacob Tremblay from House.
Yeah, and it looks like it's about, he's some disfigured in some sort of way, and it's them trying to get him accepted in school or something.
It looks like a very heartwarming, but probably also a very depressing movie.
I'll see Justice League.
Justice League
is the one to see that weekend, I would say. Yeah, one thing I will say about Justice League, I'm very impressed that they haven't shown Superman.
That's taken some restraint, because considering in Batman vs. Superman...
They showed the third act of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm wondering if they learned from the Doomsday problem.
I hope they did.
Because, I mean, right when they started the early marketing, I'm like, okay, which trailer is it when they're gonna... that's gonna end with Superman showing up, because we all know he's coming back. And... he hasn't been in any of them, other than that little dream Lois was having in that trailer. So, bravo, Warner Brothers. Yeah. You've impressed me.
So, the week after that, we got the 22nd. We've got Roman J. Israel Esquire with Denzel Washington and Coco. Which is not about a monkey.
Not about a monkey.
Yeah. Oh.
It's not about Eddie Murphy's dog growing up.
And it's not about a sugary chocolate treat.
Right.
I'm going to see Coco. We've already talked to Sandra. I think that's going to be Felicity's first movie. Just because it looks very colorful.
Yeah.
And it's a Disney Pixar movie. It centers around the Mexican Day of the Dead. So it's going to be... they're kind of doing like... they did with Moana, where they featured a lot the Polynesian culture. So kind of they're doing the same thing with the Mexican culture. And I mean, it looks really cool. I mean, Pixar movies, they tend to all be very visually impressive.
And I'm going to see Roman J. Israel, because... Denzel Washington looks interesting.
He looks awesome.
I really want to see this movie.
I mean, you know, it's Denzel Washington. He's, again, like I've said about some of these other guys, he's an up-and-coming actor. He's going to, you know, he's gonna do some good things with his career.
He looks like a sinister Cornel West.
He does.
And it's like...
and, I mean, this was written...
what a little bit of Questlove.
Yeah, exactly.
This was written and directed by Dan Gilroy, who did, like, The Bourne Legacy and Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
So, he's good. And it features Colin Farrell, who might be one of the most underrated actors working today.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
Cool. So, the week after... actually, there's kind of 2 weeks go by. Not much really comes out the week after that. And then on the December the 8th, we've got The Shape of Water, All the Money in the World, I, Tonya, and The Disaster Artist.
Oh, this is going to be a tough one. I kind of want to see a bunch of these.
Yeah, I do want to see a bunch of them. But I think of all of the ones that were just listed, I might have to go with The Shape of Water.
It's getting a lot of, like, film festivals, people are raving about it.
I've been completely fascinated by every trailer I've seen.
For those of you who don't know, this is...
Guillermo del Toro.
And it's kind of about a merman, right?
Yeah. Merman pop. Merman.
It's like a girl who's... Is she mute? Am I getting the correct?
I believe so.
So yeah, she basically gets this relationship going with this mer creature that's being studied by this group of scientists.
And is it Michael Shannon? Is he the one of those? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she kind of develops this rapport with this creature.
It's almost like a R-rated Free Willy.
Basically, it just says, if you want to describe it, it says, an otherworldly fairy tale set against the backdrop of Cold War era America circa 1962. In the hidden high security government laboratory where she works, lonely Elisa is trapped in a life of isolation. Elisa's life is changed forever when she and co-worker Zelda, played by Octavia Spencer, discover a secret classified experiment.
A.K.A. Merman.
And Sally Hawkins plays Elisa. Michael Shannon's in it. Doug Jones, who's always the perfect person to play some sort of amphibious creature.
Well, yeah, because that's pretty much what he played in Hellboy.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He's basically playing Abe Sapien in this.
Yeah.
And Richard Jenkins is in it, who's
he's always
awesome
good.
And everything.
I really want to see that, but of all the ones you listed, for some reason, if I had to only pick one, I think I'd go see The Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
Just because it's giving me...
I can't argue with that.
It's giving me such, like, an Ed Wood vibe, and... I don't know, it just, James Franco looks so freaking crazy, and I think he directed it, too.
Yeah, he did.
And it just looks so crazy.
And apparently, like, he stayed, like, not in character, but, like, he did the voice the entire time.
The Tommy Wiseau.
So he wouldn't lose it, and, like, Seth Rogen says it was a very interesting situation.
Yeah, which, if y'all haven't heard of The Disaster Artist, it's a kind of a fictional, well, not a fictional, it's telling the story of the making of this movie called, Room?
The Room.
The Room, which is kind of famously known for being one of the worst movies ever made.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, a few years ago, I was volunteering at the New Orleans Film Festival, and there was a midnight showing of The Room, and it sold out, and all these people were showing up, and apparently they throw footballs, they throw spoons, they throw all this weird shit at the screens, and I had never heard of this movie, and when I mentioned, I wonder if I can rent it, the manager of the theater said, don't rent it, you will not be able to finish it. They said, if you want to watch it, go watch it with the crowd, you'll have a lot of fun, but it's almost unwatchable, it's so bad. Wow. And I can't wait to see what the way James Franco is going to tackle
it. I think we should watch it.
Oh, I absolutely want to watch it.
That should totally be something we do before. Yeah.
Maybe we should do a commentary track.
Oh, that would be awesome.
What's up next week? It's got a lot of people in it, too. It's got, you know, Alison Brie, Kristen Bell, Josh Hutcherson is in it, Lizzie Kaplan, Zac Efron, Megan Mullally, Brian Cranston, Jason Mantzoukas, Adam Scott, Dave Franco, Eliza Coop, Kate Upton. I mean, it's Sharon Stone, Seth Rogen, J.J. Abrams. And Tommy Wiseau actually is in it.
Oh.
And he plays someone named Henry. So, I mean, it's got a pretty huge cast. And then there's I, Tonya, which we talked about a little earlier.
Yeah, we just talked about that.
That looks awesome. And then All the Money in the World, which was getting a lot of Oscar buzz, and now they said they're pulling all the, they're pulling out all the ads and everything because Kevin Spacey's the one that they were marketing it around.
Yep, I think this movie just got torpedoed.
Yeah, it probably did, and it's sad because it looked like it might have been some kind of like Oscar thing for.
Well, because remember what happened last year with was it Birth of a Nation?
Yeah,
that was getting all kinds of Oscar buzz, and then kind of some inappropriate stories came out about was it Nate Parker or whatever the guy that wrote and directed that, and Oscar season came and went, and no one talked about it.
And I mean, yeah, Kevin Spacey's playing John Paul Getty, but it looked, when you watch the trailers, it almost looked like it might be some kind of Oscar-type thing for Michelle Williams.
Oh.
And that's going to probably ruin her chances.
That's a shame, because she's fantastic.
She's a good, very, very good actress.
I mean, I wouldn't have been upset if she would have won Supporting Actress for Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, my God,
for just the one scene, because that scene wrecked me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, anyway.
So, and then, let's see, the weekend after that, we've got, The Ferdinand the Bull movie.
Yeah, oh.
John Cena. And then something else called Star Wars Last Jedi.
And Ferdinand's the one I'm
seeing.
That's
what I'm seeing, too.
This is my thing with her. I think Ferdinand's actually going to do surprisingly well. Because if you look at when Force Awakens, what was the Amy Poehler thing that opened the same day? Was it Sisters?
Yeah.
And that did very well because when Star Wars is sold out, well, they need something to see. So they're opening this animated thing because I could see a dad with all his kids going to see, not knowing any better, let's go see The Last Jedi, kids.
And honestly,
they're all sold out. Yeah. Let's go see this bull movie.
And honestly, I can probably say Ferdinand will be the one I see that weekend because when the time of The Weeknd rolls around, I probably have already seen The Last Jedi twice.
All right.
So,
the trailer for Ferdinand, it looks delightful.
It does.
I'm sure it'll probably do very well in video, but it's good counter programming for something as huge as The Last Jedi. That being said, I'm seeing The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably like John said, probably multiple times that weekend.
Yeah. So, the weekend after that, we've got four movies coming out, two of which I'm actually very excited. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
That's one that I'm very excited about.
Jumanji.
Pitch Perfect 3, we'll see.
That was a terrible trailer.
Father Figures, looks like it could maybe be funny. We'll see.
It's probably going to fall somewhere, that movie, The House.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell,
yeah. And Downsizing looks really good.
That looks very inventive, very clever. So,
is it Charlie Kaufman? Because it looks like it should
be. No, it's, what's his name that did Sideways? Alexander Payne.
Oh, okay.
So,
This is a tougher week than I would
have
thought.
I think I would, of those you just mentioned, I'd probably say Jumanji. Just because it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does look like a lot of fun.
And
Pitch Perfect 3 is something that the first one was funny, the second one was alright, this one, I can wait till it comes out.
If this one had a better trailer, I might have actually picked Pitch Perfect 3, just because I surprisingly really liked the first one.
Yeah.
The second one I thought was fine, it was funny, I mean, I didn't, you know, I had a good time seeing it, and the trailers for this one look abysmal.
I'll probably see Jumanji of those, and maybe I'll get to see Downsizing as well, but Father Figures.
In fact, Downsizing just had a new trailer that came out this week, a new one, and it looks really good.
It looks good. And then the following week, well, not even really the following week, but December 25th. I mean, I don't know what something special is going on that day, why it's coming out.
It's 2 days after Festivus.
Right, 2 days after Festivus. That was the birth of, day before Kwanzaa.
Yeah, it was the birth of Sir Isaac Newton.
Okay, that's what it is. Yeah. We got The Greatest Showman and Phantom Thread both come out.
Of those two, I'm seeing The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I love Daniel Day-Lewis. This is supposedly his last movie ever.
Yeah.
But that trailer looks boring as shit, in the words of Ryan.
And he is very correct.
It might just be the trailer, because it is
The trailer, it looks boring as shit.
It is a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, so maybe there's some crazy twist that we're not seeing yet. Yeah.
And despite the Greatest Showman being saddled by the burden that is Hugh Jackman,
Although this is a good role for Hugh Jackman.
John and I have this thing where I pretend I hate Hugh Jackman, but I really don't. But
yeah,
Hugh Jackman, I will say, like, him playing P.T. Barnum, that's good casting.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that Zendaya girl, she was fine for what we saw of her in Spider-Man, but maybe this will, you know, launch her career a little more.
And you also have the lovely Zac Efron.
Oh, he's great.
That's a handsome man.
Oh, good times. Yeah. So, that's the holidays, guys. We look forward to reporting on these films for you. I think now it's time. I was going to mention that Glenn got an SNES classic.
I did. I got one. I felt like Charlie Bucket.
You're a bastard, Dan.
Yeah.
I was driving home and I stopped at Best Buy just to use the bathroom because I had to go. And when I came out, I walked through the video game section and I didn't think that was what it was at first. I thought it was the controllers. And I was like, wait a minute, that just says SNES classic. And I'm like, and I almost felt like
I
had
to buy this?
Like I had to hide it. Like I immediately ran to the register and just like I want to buy this, and I got it. And so far, I mean, the first thing I played was F-Zero, which brought back lots of memory.
Are you going to play the Punch-Out?
Oh, you know it, Mr. Dream. Are you? I've gone through. I played F-Zero, Super Metroid, and I was playing Mega Man X yesterday. So it's awesome. Bringing back memories.
Sweet.
So. It's awesome villager time, guys.
It is.
Who do you nominate, Ryan?
Oh, yeah, he's not here.
Oh, he's not
here. He's going to nominate the entire cast of Bad Moms.
you're just like Clint Eastwood talking to the empty chair.
And for those of you can't see me, but I looked at the empty chair and talked to him.
I am going to nominate this week Liev Schreiber. You know, Ray Donovan himself. I think he's an actor who doesn't get a lot of credit for just how awesome he is, with a voice that's pretty amazing. He did a show called Secrets of the Dead on PBS that I really enjoyed.
And he narrates Hard Knocks on HBO, the NFL show.
And I actually liked, was it an HBO movie he did where he played Orson Welles?
My God, RKO 281.
Yeah.
He's so good. And for anyone to play Orson Welles, that's the voice.
Yep, mm-hmm. That's the voice he is.
And Ray Donovan, he completely transforms himself.
Yeah.
And it's every episode.
And for as shitty as that Wolverine movie was,
he was good in it. Yeah, I loved him as Sabretooth. Yeah. So, I think he's due a title.
Okay. I'm going to go with director / actor Taika Waititi that we talked about earlier. He directed Thor Ragnarok, and he was also in it. He did the motion capture for, what was the character's name again?
Korg.
I mean, he impressed me so much. I mean, not only did he direct a really good movie, he was one of the standout characters in the movie. I mean, he wasn't necessarily in it more than anybody else, but I mean, he was hilarious. Every scene he was in, he stole. And then I really enjoyed, you know, What We Do in the Shadows, that he co-starred and co-wrote and co-directed with Jermaine Clement.
And the fact that they're doing a sequel called Werewolves.
Yeah.
I can't
yeah,
wait.
I mean, if you haven't seen that, it's a fake documentary all about these four vampire roommates.
Yeah.
And they're all from different points in history because they're immortal. So there's the one that's really old, like Nosferatu, who just lives in a closet, never comes out, and he just randomly kills people and eats them. And then there's the Jermaine Clement as the he's kind of like
Vladimir.
Yeah.
You know, like Count Vlad type thing.
And then his character is he's from, what, like maybe the late 1800s?
Yes.
I guess. And then there's like a new guy that's like from like the 60s. anyway, that's kind of off topic, but it's hilarious if you watch it. And I think he did a really good job with this, and that's my guy for the week.
What about you, Glenjamin?
I'm going to nominate a gentleman by the name of Chris Hemsworth.
That's another handsome man.
Handsome man indeed.
And better than his brother.
Well, at least one of his brothers.
One of his brothers, yes.
Yeah.
I think he's the best Hemsworth. But he's way better than Luke Hemsworth.
Well, you know, he's...
Luke is pretty cool.
Yeah, Luke is pretty cool. But I'm nominating Chris this week because he's the God of Thunder or the Lord of Thunder, depending on who's telling. He's playing Thor, which I think he was kind of born to play.
Yep.
I mean, I remember when I first saw him in Star Trek as George Kirk. I thought he was cool in that. Yeah. He did a really, I think, underrated movie Ron Howard called Rush.
Yeah,
that I thought he was fantastic in.
Yeah.
Lately, he's been like flexing his comedy chops a little more. He was in the Ghostbusters remake and Vacation.
Yeah.
And he did these little short films called Team Thor, kind of like what Thor was doing while Civil War was going on, which if you want to laugh, look up those. I think they're hilarious. And truly, if you see him, like, he just seems like such a good guy. He's from Australia. Seems like he's having such a fun time being an actor, and he's having such a good time being an Avenger. Plus, he was in Cabin in the Woods, which I loved.
Yeah.
And for a funny story, I kind of suspect he may have caused my daughter to have been born a week early, because I think Sandra may have inadvertently gone into labor when she saw
the trailer for Ragnarok.
Yes. So, I'm nominating Chris Hemsworth.
Anyone swayed?
All good choices. They're all good choices.
I think all three of these are good this week.
I am going to actually lean towards John's nominee, and the reason for that is Chris Hemsworth has been great as Thor. However, I don't think you get the tone of this movie unless you have Taika Waititi as a director, and you can tell that in everything that he's done. Because I think this movie is going to do very well, it seems to be tracking to do an amazing amount of business. It's going to be primarily because of that voice being added to it.
Oh, no, I have no problems with Taika Waititi. I think he made a great entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I think it's the quickest we've ever coalesced.
Yeah, and I think Chris Hemsworth he'll probably do some more cool stuff.
There's another Avengers movie coming out.
Liev Schreiber, we got next season of Ray Donovan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen Rush, check that one out. And plus Taika Waititi, I don't know if it was up to him, but the use of the immigrant song.
Yeah.
In Thor, I think that might have been one of the best music
moments. They used it at least twice in the movie, and it was great both times they used it.
Yeah, which apparently it's that song, if you listen to the lyrics, it's kind of about Norse mythology.
Yeah.
So, that's it, yeah.
Cool.
Taika Waititi.
So
please come hang out with us.
Yeah.
We would enjoy that to happen a lot. Or we'll go to New Zealand if you invite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, guys, that's going to do it for us this week here at The Village. We'll have Ryan back next week.
We hope,
yeah.
This has been Greg,
Glenn,
and John.
We will see you next week.